Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, it's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show. And this week my guest is Sally Weiss. And I've known Sally now for about a year, well it is a year, because she's been on the Jack Principles, Three Principles Extended Professional Training. That's quite a mouthful, here in Spain. And she's got a very interesting lady, she's got an interesting story to tell, and she's had an interesting life journey. As well as that, she's a lovely lady to speak to as well. So I'm very happy to be speaking with her. And let me just tell you a little bit about Sally. She's been working with Jacqueline Hollows, who works in the prisons and rehab centres, and also in the she's been working in the alcohol service for 16 years. So without further ado, I'll bring Sally on. Hi, Sally. Welcome.
Hiya.
All right. Well, like I said, we've spent a bit of time together over the last year at the Jack Pransky events, and I was very impacted by, well, part of the, maybe I'll share with people, part of the course was on the last day, our participants of the course had to do a presentation of the three principles understanding to the public. And Sally, actually, it was actually a mistake, but you ended up being the last person to present, didn't you? Wasn't you?
Yeah, it was a mistake, yeah.
But it actually worked out perfectly because it seemed to finish off everybody's presentation perfectly. And people were very impacted by it. Even the people who already knew your story were impacted by it. And I wasn't at the Tikkun event this year, but I've heard Sally was there. And Sally was telling her story once again and sharing at the Tikkun event. And I heard from sources that you got a standing ovation there from like over 700 people. So
yeah.
I think it might be nice to start off with that story, just to give people a flavour of who you are, Sally, if you don't mind. I know you're probably fed up with sharing that story, your life journey so far, but would you mind starting off with your story for that?
No, not at all. And I don't mind sharing the story. I know it might get boring for other people, but if I can impact on anybody who's suffering with addiction, then it's worth sharing. So, I've been drinking alcoholically for about 38 years. And about 8 years ago, it started really impacting on my life. I'd always had a good job in science and worked hard and just partied hard at night and at weekends. And then it started impacting on my day and I started drinking lunch times. And then suddenly overnight it seemed to be first thing in the morning. So consequently, my life became totally unmanageable and hell, it was absolute hell. So I lost my job and started losing all my friends and my family and my health, my self-esteem, my self-respect, everything went. And I went to many treatment centres, which were all 12-step. And each time I came out, I always know that there was a drink somewhere along the line, but I didn't know how long it would be. I was what they call white knuckling it. And then just over a year ago, I was living with my mum because she'd got dementia and I was looking after her in the Warwickshire countryside. And basically I was just existing and I was getting up every morning at 6 o'clock. Shaking from head to foot with withdrawals from the alcohol. And I used to go down to my mum's garage in the dark and start drinking my gin, which consequently I'd start vomiting. It was just absolutely horrendous. Wow. And one morning I went down and I started seeing shadows, and I was actually talking to people that weren't there in the garage. And I sat on this little stool trying to get this gin down me to stop the shakes, and I just could not stop vomiting. And I just looked up to I don't know what, the universe, God of my understanding, I've no idea, my dad who's passed away, and I just said, please help me. Please, I can't do this anymore. Anyway, I just had this feeling that there was something inside me that was fighting to live. Mm. It was just sort of washed over me. I mean, I've had 16 years of this, but not to this great extent. Anyway, I phoned for an ambulance because I was so unwell. And the ambulance arrived, the paramedic arrived, and he just did a few quick tests and literally threw me straight into his paramedic's vehicle and said he wouldn't wait for the ambulance, he hadn't got time. And he put the blue lights on and we drove all the way to Warwick Hospital with the blue lights on. And I actually joked with him and said, are you rushing for your breakfast? Because I couldn't understand why he'd got the blue lights on. Mm. And he said, no, I'm rushing to get you to hospital because you're dying. And I didn't realise until afterwards, apparently I'd got acidosis and hypothermia and literally minutes to live. Anyway, I came out of hospital, but I still came out with the same way of thinking that alcohol was the only way for me to survive any dis-ease that I felt. So I managed to get into a really good treatment centre in Southampton because it was the only one I could find that would take my dog. And my dog is all that I've got. Mm. She's my saviour. I love her to pieces. So I went to a really good treatment centre in Southampton where, again, it was 12 steps. But they did treat me with some respect, which most treatment centres don't. And I came out of there sort of just feeling that this cycle was never going to end. I was sober, but my life would have to be going to AA every single night, asking for God's forgiveness almost, going over and over my past and the horrendous things that had happened to me. I thought, there's a drink somewhere. I don't know whether it's this year, next year, but, you know, I just didn't feel confident that I wasn't going to drink again. Mm. And then I got introduced to Jacqueline Hollows, who runs Beyond Recovery, and she became my life coach. And it was a totally different style of counselling I'd ever had before. She didn't try and fix me. She didn't even sort of reply to me very often. She just let me talk and talk. And then she'd just point me in different directions. And I found that I was coming to my own solutions of what was happening in my life. Mm. And so eventually she said to me, I'm introducing you to the three principles, which I've never heard of. And so she started teaching me then what the three principles were about. And I started to read books that she gave me and watch videos of Sid Banks. And it was just amazing how I realized that I've got this innate health I didn't know about and that I did want to live. And I realised that every situation I'd ever had when I'd drunk, I'd blame somebody else or a situation. So it wasn't that I was born with a disease of alcoholism, like I'd always been told, but I didn't know how to deal with dis-ease. So I'd always fix myself. And it was just the enormity of realizing that it had all come from my thought process, and that basically I had been stuck in the addictive cycle of thinking, and that something would upset me or annoy me and I'd fix it with a drink. Then I'd feel guilt and shame for having the drink, so I'd have more. And I just was going round and round in this cycle of thinking. And suddenly realised, after quite a long time of seeing Jacqueline every week, that I had a choice in life of what my experiences were minute by minute, just by the way I thought about everything. It was just huge. So yeah, that was the beginning for me, really. And then I signed up to do the extended practitioner training with Jack Pransky, who is a remarkable man, most humble man I've ever met. And every time I'm in the room with Jack, I just feel this peace come over me. And met some wonderful people in Spain. And we deepened our understanding of the three principles. And it took me a year, and it suddenly came to me that actually my addiction was just manifested by my thinking. It was just an illusion. I wasn't an addict at all. And that was massive for me. And I've had many insights about my childhood and just the way my life has panned out. How really, you know, it's been me that's made those experiences how they were. And I certainly had a choice to change them just by the way I thought of simple things every day. So it's just amazing.
Thanks for that, Sally. Well, there's quite a few, I was making a few notes as you were speaking there, and there's things that jumped out at me. And you talked about, because, well, we're talking specifically about alcohol here at the moment, but it's most addictions, as we've realized, the power of thought that plays in our lives, how that affects us. I was just reminded of my own experiences. I used to smoke, and it seemed to be every time. I think you mentioned that if there was a difficult situation, you'd reach for a drink. And I was the kind of, I think many people do, can associate with that with cigarette, you know, it's, oh, give me a cigarette. And it seemed to be every time I went through a difficult period in my life, my intake of cigarettes went up. But after the event passed, the actual smoking didn't reduce. So I was slowly creeping up and creeping up to the point where I realized I was smoking something ridiculous like 60 a day. And people that do it in various ways, whether it's drugs or food or many different ways. So can we just go back to, because you talked about things that happened and now in your life, and you perhaps blame the external circumstances. And I'm sure there's a lot of people can relate to that, because you say, well, if you had my life, you'd probably take drugs, or you'd probably drink as much as I do, or smoke as much as I do. Would you just like to talk about that, what you saw about that, about the external circumstances wasn't a reason why you had to drink?
I think I've been looking at this recently. I went to the addiction service that I've been attending for many years this week. And I did have some thoughts about that some of addictive behaviour can be from learned behaviour. I'm thinking that I might be wrong in that one, because it took me a year to realise that addiction was just an illusion. But I started fixing with alcohol at a very young age. And my parents had always used alcohol to calm them down. And after a heavy day at work, they'd come home and, you know, hit the gin and tonics and that sort of thing. And, and I think as a child, I saw what my family did for fun was always drinking. What they did to fix was always drinking.
Yeah.
And I actually, the first time I got drunk was when I was 5, apparently, which is quite remarkable to think that a child can do that, because my mum had really upset me. And, yeah, apparently I got drunk when I was 5. And that's so scary to realise that children pick up on things like that. But yeah, I smoke myself, talking about your addiction. And I know then with smoking that it comes from thought and habit, because if I'm busy all day, like at the, I went to the chicken conference last week, I think I had probably 3 cigarettes a day. Rather than 20 a day when I'm sitting at home on my own with the packet in front of me. And the same with food for me. If I've got food in the house and I go in the kitchen and see it, then my thought obviously is, oh, wow, you know, look at that bar of chocolate looking at me. And if it's not there, the thought doesn't come. And the blaming, I don't know, it's just maybe almost a culture that I was in. Something happens, you fix it. Like maybe people now fix it with drugs or, you know, different things. Everybody has their own fix, because we find it so difficult to deal with the feelings of disease. And now, luckily for me, I don't suffer very much with dis-ease because I don't let the thoughts come in that make me feel that way. If a negative thought comes in, I don't tend to hold on to it, because I know with confidence now that it will pass and that I am okay, and I will be okay. So, yeah, my life is totally different in that sense, because I don't hang on to any negatives.
Right.
And people, places and things cannot affect me. It's only me that can affect my experiences now by my thinking about those things.
Right. So you mentioned the word illusion a few times, and I think you're pointing to that very much in what you're saying now. So would you talk to that? You've said a few times, like, the illusion of addiction, because, like I said, it seems, especially I know in the 12-step program, it can be a bit of a touchy ground, because they say, no, people pretending they're not addicted can be. I don't know that much about the 12-step, but I've heard they're quite strict on certain things. You correct me if I'm wrong. But what I'm drifting all over a bit here, but what do you mean by the illusion of addiction? Would you just talk to that?
Well, because it's a label that you get, if you like, an alcoholic, because I was addicted to alcohol, which I was, physically I was, and mentally I was. But once that physical addiction has gone, when I'd had the detox, then all that was left was the mental part of it. So me thinking that I could fix something with another drink, that was made up. I couldn't fix it with a drink. Maybe in the early days, temporarily, the first couple of drinks would fix me. But when I realised that it all came from me, from the inside out and not the outside in, then I suddenly realised, well, I can fix myself just by the way I think. I don't need an outside source like alcohol, or even a cigarette to fix me. Yeah, I mean, I attended AA for a long time, and up until Christmas last year, I've been going there for 9 months because that's all I knew. And that's all that's available, really, for an alcoholic is to go it alone, which is really, really tough, or with the AA program, which is fantastic and keeps millions of people sober.
Yeah.
But then I suddenly thought, I'm going to these meetings 3 times a week and loving the people and loving what it's all about. But all I'm doing is bringing up my past. And for me to keep calling myself an alcoholic every day is just affirming it in my mind. You are an alcoholic. And I thought, well, actually, I'm not drinking and I haven't drunk for 9 months. How can I still be an alcoholic? It's not safe for me to drink alcohol because I know through experience that I'm not a person that can just have one drink because I've always used drink to pour an effect. So I will never be able to safely drink alcohol again, and now I have absolutely no interest in ever picking a drink up. So AA was great for me for 9 months, but listening to the horror stories of people and me telling my horror story, I was just living in the past all the time and asking God for forgiveness. I've made my amends now to people who care about me, and by being sober and helping others is not making up because the things I did were quite horrendous to my friends and family, but I think it's reward enough for them just to see me sober and thriving.
And you're helping many people as well through their work you're doing as well. So, well, again, I'm just, my story with the cigarettes wasn't quite as harsh as yours, but as you're speaking, it just reminded me there when you talked about being in the AA meetings, and it did sound to me very much when you kept going, said you had to keep going over the old stories. I saw somebody like picking at a wound, you know, if they cut themselves and you're constantly scratching at it, it's never going to heal, is it? And then it came to the point where you realised it sounded that it just wasn't helpful for you. For some people, they have to, I'd imagine some people that it's helpful, the time period could be different for each individual before they actually get to the stage where you got to.
Yeah, well, I honestly never thought that I would stop going to AA. Yeah. But this time I had a sponsor and I was on step 9, and because that's all I knew, and that's all the majority of people in addiction know is the 12-step program. And it is a fantastic organisation. But yes, every time I relive my story or heard somebody else's story, it somehow evokes a feeling of wanting a drink.
Yeah, I can relate.
You know, I'd almost start craving a drink when I was sitting in a meeting of AA.
Yeah.
And the only time I was thinking of alcohol at all was at an AA meeting. Because now it just doesn't come into my mind anymore. Yeah, alcoholic drink isn't in my life. Yeah. So there's no need for me to think about it. And I was having, every time I went to a meeting, I was coming home and having nightmares about my drinking.
Right.
You know, drinking dreams and waking up and sweating, thinking I'd had a drink.
Right.
And all that's gone now. And because I don't ever think, you know, I've had a lovely day today, walking the dog, doing my housework. And until you mentioned alcohol just now, I hadn't thought of it. So that is a miracle for me. Because
yes.
I was in active addiction, it was every waking second alcohol was in my mind. Where I was going to get it from, would I have enough? How much would I need to get, stop me shaking? When would I stop vomiting? Could I get out of the front door to get the alcohol? It's being an addict is the hardest job I've ever had.
Well, I've spoken to, it's interesting, I keep coming back to this. I've done quite a few conversations now on the addiction. And a good friend of mine, he was actually over in Spain as well. I won't mention his name, but he had a similar story to yours. He got to the stage where he was in such a bad place. He was going to the off license and he didn't have money. He was stealing bottles of vodka or whiskey or whatever it was, because it just was in such a bad place. And he thought, I could be wrong with this story, but he thought he was always going to have to attend the AA. And he's now in the same position to you, where he doesn't feel he needs to go anymore. He's kind of conquered that. But he understands now the role of thought, which you talked about very much. Yeah,
well, I mean, that's why I have huge empathy for the men and women in prison. Because addiction takes you to the lowest level that you would never, ever expect to go to. I mean, I've now got a criminal record for drink driving. Because, you know, once you have that drink inside of you, you don't really think about what you're doing or you need. You know, I was driving to go and buy more alcohol. That's all I had in my mind. And I used to go to people's houses, friends and family, and I used to steal their alcohol. And you know, just that just isn't the person that I am sober. But I would do anything to have got my fix. You know, I can totally understand that. And as I say, these men in prison, they've done some of their crimes for drug money or alcohol money, or you know, their behavior has caused them to be arrested with violence or what have you. I mean, I was just lucky that I'm not a violent person, but if it had made me violent, then I don't know what I might have done.
It's all this just because we're not understanding now with the thought feeling connection. But I think, sorry, go on, sorry.
No. Yeah, I mean, the feeling when you're in addiction is just absolute sheer anxiety the whole time. But that is because of the physical addiction, and because thought is 100% always on the drug or the alcohol. So you don't have any clarity of mind. Your thought process just isn't, well, it... I don't know, it's just not real. I can't explain what the thoughts are like. It's horrific what you go through. But until you're sober or clean, and it's very difficult to think logically and see that there might be an answer somewhere else, or, you know, you just can't think rationally. So you don't realise that the feeling you're getting is necessarily from the alcohol. You know, I just thought I was a very anxious person, and that I always have been and I always would be, so I always therefore have to fix. I never thought my anxiety would go away just from a simple thing like my thought process.
So can we talk a little more about that? Because I'm sure there's people, perhaps there's people who are in the position you were in when you're in that, and just hearing your story could, I'm sure, can give them a bit of hope. Because I know there's some people out there who think they're probably feeling like you did, like, this, I'm never going to be able to get free of this. Can you just talk about that how you understand the role that thought? I know we've already touched on this already, but can we just go into that a bit deeper? Are you seeing the clarity around that more when, for example, when you go into the prisons now or the rehab centres? How do you approach this with people who were in those difficult situations, in that difficult frame of mind?
That's difficult. I think when when you're actively in addiction or in any state of dis-ease, you don't realise that you have a choice. You label yourself as an anxious person or a depressive person. And I suppose now I've got an understanding of the three principles. I've realised that every thought I have determines every feeling I have, therefore every experience I have. And that thoughts are going through our minds, you know, 100 miles an hour all of the time. Mm. But I don't tend to hold on to all of my thoughts anymore. It's like, you know, I had an experience in Spain where somebody said to me, well, now you're saying that you're not an alcoholic. Do you think you could drink again? And I had this panic come over me, like, oh my gosh, what he's just said could be right. Am I questioning now my drinking? Could I have a drink? But it's like all these thoughts are rushing through your head. And as Jacqueline Hollow said, it's like a river of thought. And if you imagine all your thoughts are fish in the river swimming past you, and that thought went through my head like a fish in the river. And I grabbed hold of it and started fighting with it as if I was catching the fish.
Yeah.
And for an hour, I was fighting with this thought. Can I drink? Can I not drink? Oh, gosh, if I'm not an alcoholic, I could have one glass of wine. And then, you know, the realization came, no, I know the truth is I cannot drink safely.
Mm.
And so that thought, I literally threw it back in the river of thought. Don't even come in my head again. Don't give, you know, I'm not giving it headspace.
Yeah.
Because that is a dangerous thought for me to have. And it's gone now, and I've realised it was just something that had occurred to me, but I've fought with it, that thought, for too long. So, yeah, generally I have no thoughts like that. Mm. If I think about alcohol, I can get the bad feeling back.
Mm.
And how powerful I realised the thought process was in determining my feelings was every time I saw alcohol on the television, somebody drinking it on Coronation Street or something like that, I used to purposely make myself go make a noise like, oh, how disgusting.
Mm.
And gradually over time, it became natural. And I can remember I went into an off license where I used to go into nearly every day. And I've been doing this process for quite a long time on purpose to try and repulse myself. And I saw this guy buy 8 cans of Stella.
Hmm.
And I just looked, and I actually physically was nearly sick.
Right.
Because I've conditioned my thinking into that is bad for me, that is disgusting stuff. And I suddenly thought, whoa, the power of thought that I could almost physically be sick, the feeling that come from my thought process, was just amazing. So therefore, if I don't hold on to those negative ones, I don't get the negative feelings and the negative experience. So I try and just hold on to the positive feelings and thoughts. And just the simple things in life, like the sun shining today, how lovely.
Mm.
And actually, when we were in rehab doing this 3-day intensive, we were talking about superstitions. I don't know how that came about. But one lad was saying, if I see a magpie, my day's just ruined. It's just awful. And we all laughed. And I said to him, do you know what? I used to think exactly the same. If I saw one magpie in my garden, I used to look out and say, oh, flipping typical, landed in my garden, that one. And I'd then go off on a negative thinking process all day, and that magpie would still be in my mind. I've seen a magpie, therefore my day is going to be going badly. And it wasn't until I started learning the three principles and realizing that this thought process, that was an absolutely ridiculous thought and suspicion passed down in generations. And a magpie actually landed in my garden about 6 months ago. And I just looked at it. For the first time, I saw it for what it was. And it is a beautiful bird. And I just looked at it and went, oh, thank you for landing in my garden. And actually, the one for sorrow with magpies actually comes from us feeling sorry for them. I looked it up.
All right.
Because they go around in pairs all the time, and they have pairs for life, magpies do. It's us that have said, oh, the poor magpie.
Yeah.
But we've turned it round to poor us.
Yeah.
I just had to laugh. I thought that came from a simple thought of a magpie is going to ruin my day.
Yeah.
How on earth can that be?
Yeah. All these
and my feelings then were hilarious, and I had a great day laughing about, you know, that.
Yeah. It's just an important point, though, about we make all these things up, don't we? And we have those thoughts that come into our heads that says something, or, like, say, from the conditioning you've been around, like something bad happens, so I'll have a cigarette, or I'll have a drink. And it's just as ludicrous as the, like you say, you're talking about the magpie thing. I remember once, it just jumped into my mind. I went to my friend's, you know, I work in the gardens. And one of my friend, one of my good friends is Swedish. And I went to do his mother's garden once, and she gave me some keys to open a gate that I had to get through a certain gate in the garden. And I came back in the house and I put the keys on the table, and she freaked out. Because apparently in Sweden, it might be even someplace in the UK, I don't know, it was bad luck to put keys on the table. But the reaction that she was like, to me, it was like way over the top at the time, you know. But it was, she just really, one of these old Swedish superstitions that you don't, it's bad luck to put keys on the table. And we do that with so many things in our heads. And then, like say, it leads on to, like say, it led to Eric having quite a strong jumping, oh, you can't do that. And then, and so it's, we do that so much often with our thinking mind, don't we?
Yeah, it's like when I first met Jack Fransky, I was so amazed by what I'd learnt just with one day with him in Birmingham last year. As I left, I said, do you know, Jack, I think I might be booking a flight and coming to Spain. Yeah. Now, I thought I had a massive fear of flying because I'd always thought I had, and that I'd always fixed before I even got on the flight. I'd have to have, you know, 5 pints of cider or whatever it was, because I said, oh, I'm so frightened of flying. I've got to fix myself before I get on, because I'll be so anxious. I'll probably faint and I'll be sick, and built up this massive fear. So I did book my flight to Spain. And about a month before, I thought, well, what on earth have I done? You know, I've never flown sober. Is this a big mistake? Anyway, I thought, well, just don't let that come into my head. It's a month, because now I live so much in the now. It's a month away. Why are you even thinking about something that you don't know what's going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen in the next second, let alone a month's time. And so the day came when I was flying out for Jack's training, and I just kept everything in the now, and I just thought, let's look forward to the journey to the airport. Great, let's go into the cafe and buy something to eat on the plane. And I just took in everyone around me and watched what they were doing and where they were going. Didn't have any thoughts of fear, because it was the height part of the flight I didn't like. And obviously, it's going to crash. And I found myself just walking onto the plane with everyone else. I was on my own. People were drinking all around me. there was a stag party in front of me and a hen party behind me. And so it was, to me, the greatest thing I'd ever achieved without a drink. And I just sat in my seat and suddenly realised that I'd got the whole road to myself, which I now think is universal mind, because I then had a choice of moving out of the aisle seat that I'd chosen so I couldn't see out of the window. And I chose to move and look out of the window and try and face this fear that I thought I had of heights.
Yeah.
And I looked out, just keeping it in the now, and I thought, oh my God, look at those beautiful clouds.
Yeah.
Look at all the buildings down there. And there was no fear of flights, no fear of flying. And I absolutely loved it. I chatted to people in front of me, behind. They were all drinking alcohol. And I looked at them and thought, you poor bugger, you just paid £6 for that tiny can. my whole experience was just so much different to how it would have been a year ago.
Mm.
You know, I'd have spent £30 on beer on that.
More than a flight, probably, yeah.
Yeah. And when I got off the plane, I thought, my gosh, my life has just taken off because I now have a choice. I can travel with no fear about the alcohol, the height, the flight. I'm just okay.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I can conquer the world almost. I felt like that minute.
Right.
It was fantastic. So yeah, I'm planning more flights and, you know, travelling all around the world now.
Fantastic.
Well, when I get a job to pay for them.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about that then? Because like I say, well, you've been working with Jacqueline Hollows in the prisons and the rehab centres and the alcohol service. So is that something you really want to focus on now with helping people with in this field?
Yeah, no, I haven't been working in the alcohol service.
Okay,
I've been what they call a service user.
Okay.
I've been seeing a counsellor there on and off for 16 years.
Okay.
Yes, I've been doing voluntary work in the prisons and the addiction service. And my absolute dream would eventually be to have my own treatment centre that was the three principles, and that's also something that Jacqueline Hollows would really love to do as well.
Yeah.
So ideally, you know, if we had the funding or I won the lottery, even though I don't do it, we will open a treatment centre in the UK that is 3P run.
Wow, fantastic. That'd be great.
Which would be absolutely fantastic, because I've seen what happens in prisons by what Jacqueline teaches. The three principles is working for the men. It's giving them some hope. And, you know, they're seeing now for themselves what they've done throughout their lives, the same as myself. They've fixed a problem which has led them to be violent or steal or, you know, whatever they've done, they realise they now have a choice just by the way they think about it, and that they can have good experiences. And by keeping everything in the now, the well-being and the stress within the prison is just, you know, the well-being has gone right up and the stress has gone right down for the men that have been lucky enough to do the programme.
Yeah.
You know, the prison can't believe the turnaround in some of the prisoners that are in there for, you know, terrible crimes, which, you know, they don't have to do that again.
Yeah.
One of the prisoners came to Tickham and made a speech, which was amazing, because I saw him in prison working in the canteen there. Mm. And to see him out now working here, trying to help other prisoners himself, you know, it's just marvellous. So yeah, I'm hoping eventually I'm going to be running my own courses voluntarily in addiction centres for now, and then hopefully eventually I'll get paid work either in an addiction service or when I opened my own rehab centre with Jacqueline Hollows.
I've interviewed Jacqueline myself on here, and like I said, she's doing some amazing work, isn't she? Like you just pointed towards. So yeah, and this is in Florida. I think there's the Gulf Breeze Recovery Center that is purely three principles.
Perhaps
you won't have the Gulf Breeze in the UK, but you could. It'd be nice to have a nice center where you could really help people, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're actually having a meeting with her, actually, a Skype meeting, I think, from the lady who runs that one.
Yes, and her name's Christy Smith, is it?
So, you know, get some ideas and do some research on it.
Right.
But it would just be fantastic. I mean, for the people who we did it in Birmingham at the treatment centre, I said to them, you are so lucky to be getting this 3-day intensive course because it could change your life.
Mm.
And from what we know, it has statistically already.
Wow.
So yeah, my passion is just to save people like myself from the horrors of addiction, because it can be done. And there is great hope. And, you know, my life experiences now are fantastic. You know, I just got such hope. I have no more than I had a year ago, you know, but I have peace of mind and hope.
Yeah.
And the peace of mind is the most massive thing. And yeah, I feel I have a good future. And I just said to everyone now, my name's Sally and I'm not an alcoholic, which I never thought I'd hear myself say.
Beautiful. Well, Sally, I think that'd be a good time to finish it there. I think there's I'm sure people have found this interesting and hopefully hopeful. Well, there's one thing actually I would like to just, I think you touched on it there when you said you found peace of mind, because there's a lot of talk in the three principles arena, field, whatever you want to call it, about innate well-being. Would you just like to finish off with what that means to you, innate well-being? I think you'd like to say you've more or less been pointing to that over the last minute or two, but would you just
It's like when I've got a greater understanding of the three principles, and I realised that I had got this innate health, this survival that we, you know, we're born with, really, this being wanting to thrive and survive. And when I think back to that day in the garage where I cried out for help from somebody, was my survival, you know, the fight or flight thing. And I just that day wanted to fight. And yeah, it's just the simplicity of knowing that I'm okay and that I'm well. You know, I might physically have a headache or whatever it might be. But I'm okay, and everything will be okay. You know, nothing external can harm me. Everything comes from within. My well-being comes from the way I think, which then affects the way I feel and how my experiences are. So I now think differently. And my feelings and experience are different. They're all positive and hopeful. And as I say, just little things in life make me happy. And that's just how I think we're all meant to be, just innately well.
Yeah, there's so many people chasing something external, aren't they?
Well, I always wanted the bigger house and the better job. And now I have no job and I still have my small house, but I have peace of mind and clarity.
Yeah, that's all what everybody's looking for, isn't it, really? You know, there's this label I see, people have labels of success, and I think if you're not happy or you're not at peace, or you can have £1 million in the bank, you can have everything, but if you're not got peace, you've got nothing, have you?
Well, I actually touched on that with somebody I was talking to in Spain, and she was, you know, feeling a bit low and what have you. And I said to her, do you know what? If somebody offered me multi-million pounds now to take away what I've learnt about the three principles in the last year, I'll tell them no, thank you. I'll keep my learning of the three principles, be so privileged to what I've got now, which is peace of mind and clarity. I wouldn't change anything or swap my learning for anything physical out there.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, Sally. I think that is the place to definitely call it a day there, I think. Well, if people would like to get in touch with you, where would you be open to people getting in contact with you?
Yeah, of course.
Would you like to give your email address or where they can contact you?
Yeah. Well, you can either look me up on Facebook, or it's sallywise@hotmail.com, and that's Wise with a Y.
Right. Lovely.
Yeah, if I can help anybody, you know, that's what it's about now, is passing it on.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. Well, we both know, don't we, because from the experiences we've been sharing over the last few years, like say how many people have been impacted by this and how positive it is, not only just for people with addictions, but across the board in life in general.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I won't keep you any longer, Sally. Thank you so
much.
All
right, thank you.
And I hope to see you again soon.
Thank you ever so much.
Right, thank you very, very much. And just stay on the air after I finish the recording. I'll just have a brief word after I've stopped the recording.
Okay.
So,
thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Sally. And if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me. The best way really is Facebook, or my email is the initials for Ice Cream for the Soul, which is ic4ts@hotmail.com. But best probably place to get me is on Facebook with Yoga Mark. We've got the Viva event coming up here in November. I should have written the dates, it's gone off the top of mine, but we've got the Three Principles Viva event here in Spain. And if anybody wants to find out more about that, just get in touch with me. So thanks very much, Sally. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.